Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Not all monsters are under the bed. Some are sleeping next to you. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
Well, apparently we're going to be getting some more evidence, and they're saying they're looking at everything. That's just not the private investigator. That's the district attorney in Pennsylvania that's saying, yeah, we're going to look at this a little bit more, or a lot more. Finally, the case of Ellen Greenberg. This, of course, the young 20-something-year-old teacher who was found by her boyfriend in the apartment, stabbed 20 times, and some post-mortem stabs as well. But it was ruled a suicide because, you know, why not? And it's just been sitting like that for more than a decade now. But her parents have been fighting tooth and nail to get the right to challenge the medical examiner's opinion on this. The Supreme Court in Pennsylvania is going to be taking that up very shortly, and that could really change the game in all of this. But there's new evidence that's been coming to light thanks to the reporting and the investigation of many reporters and colleagues, Brian Etten at News Nation being one of them, raising some doubts about the original classification, even more than we've already had doubts, bruises and such found in that report that were never really looked at. But I guess you got to say, if you're not going to take post-mortem stab wounds as being something odd, you're probably not going to be looking at bruises either. Robin Dreek, retired FBI Special Agency for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, joining me to discuss. The parents of Ellen Greenberg have to be, I would hope, happy at this point that finally, after a lot of kicking and screaming, somebody is finally looking at this going, yeah, you're right. This was all very, very.
Boy, happy is an interesting word for parents that went through this, isn't it? I'd say relieved that they can finally get some traction going in something that's been really probably one of the greatest injustices you and I have covered. Yeah. This is really a massive injustice. 20 stab wounds and it's suicide. It's literally impossible. Yeah. It is impossible. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned Brian Etten. You know, we've seen him cover some great cases before. And what a great field investigator he is. Yeah. So I'm glad he was able to do this for the family. I'm glad they're paying attention to it. And yeah, let's see if justice is done. I'm glad they're taking a note of it. And that's why, you know, a lot of times, you know, in our day and age, and it's kind of a side note of this, you know, press gets a bad rep a lot of time, the media does. But without the media of attention on certain cases like this, where would it go? It would go nowhere. And then you have really important people doing really bad things and getting away with it, like I think was going on right here.
And they already have for quite some time. But now, thank God. I think there's probably a certain individual right now that might be getting a little nervous of the cushy life that they've been living elsewhere. Guy DeAndre, the prosecutor assigned to the case, believes there's no way that Ellen's death could be classified as a suicide and noted inconsistencies in the investigation, including the medical examiner agreeing to change the cause of death before, and then it was reclassified as a suicide. There's a lot of people in this that are finally speaking out and being a part of this case in a way that we haven't seen before. If this does get an investigation, because the thing is, it didn't to begin with. It was ruled a suicide, so nothing really happened. Nobody looked into anything. There were Samuel Goldberg, the fiance, he had family that was attorneys. They came in there. They got all the digital pieces out of their phones, laptops, all that, according to the allegations. And then the scenes cleaned up and life went on. Pretty amazing that it went as smoothly as it did for them at that moment in time. Now, I'm not saying he did it, but at the very least, there's got to be some questioning or something that needs to go on here, even all these years later.
Yeah, maybe not him, but definitely someone.
Yeah.
You know, it's, boy, some of these cases we cover, you can see, or at least I can see with some conjecture that probably just laziness, you know, by investigators that might have a big workload. And so they're going to kind of make it easier to let this one brush aside so I can focus on what might be more important, or I have some political pressure from an elected sheriff that happens sometimes. And there's a lot of reasons why people will take an easier route, but this is not a case of taking an easier route. This required a level of cooperation and corruption, it looks like, by multiple people to do things that just don't make sense. I mean, every time you and I cover something and I hear that word suicide, I immediately am skeptical. Mm-hmm. You know, unless you're dealing with someone that is been under treatment for clinical depression, you know, under doctor's care or suffering from PTSD. I mean, there's a life arc and behavior arc, as we've talked about so many times, of people that commit suicide. This is, you know, her life, it's a spike. You know, whenever you have a spike in behavior, especially one when it involves suicide, because it's convenient, it looks convenient, it's probably is, you know, to someone who's trying to do, especially then when you have 20 stab wounds. Come on.
And they never check the knife for prints. They never looked at any of these things. One of the first responders on the scene speaking up recently too, saying, look, it looked very suspicious. The 911 call was bizarre. The blood was coagulated as if it had been there for all these things. I mean, anybody would look at this evidence today if they didn't think they had some sort of a golden card out of this and go, yeah, this certainly looks like a murder. But somehow, some way, this was, I don't know if this is just a really perfect example of how power can do what it does when left unchecked, because this is, I mean, just a crazy example of it, that just how unchecked it was. And I don't know if it was just pure luck or they had the right connections in the right place and it was a perfect storm to get away with something. I don't know. But why there was nobody looking into this is insane to me. Also, I'm just on a human level. If this is your fiance and whether you're on the outs with her or not, and she's murdered in your apartment, why would you not be the one raising your hand going, yeah, please come talk to me and let me do everything I possibly can to find out who did this? I'd make it like my life's mission until I figured it out, if it's not, in fact, you.
Yeah, the thing that also makes me curious about a case like this is, so for, because you needed a cooperation by multiple people to not do justice here, to not do a full investigation, to reverse, you know, things that that the autopsy was saying. You know, there's a lot of things and a lot of people, or at least a few people at least, that were involved. And so what were the levers of influence that people had on there? Because when people, because remember, people typically inherently don't want to lie. They don't want to deceive. They don't want to do things that are incongruent with behavior that's safe for them and their futures. Mm-hmm. In order for them to do that, they have to feel unsafe with that certain behavior. In other words, someone had a lever of fear over these people in some way that inspired them to take action that was not congruent with true justice in the American way. So I'm very curious what those levers were, because as we've seen in multiple cases that we've dealt with, is that if you have more than one person involved, there's going to be leakage. You know, people start talking. And the other thing too is that I just forgot my train of thought. There's so many things on this one that are just wrong.
There are. I mean, it goes on and on. It baffles the mind. One can only hope that they're going to finally go somewhere. I mean, there's going to be a lot of unhappy people, because it shows a lot of people were involved in either looking the other way, maybe some wittingly, some not, depending on their knowledge of the case and what was going on. But whoever orchestrated this to not go into a murder investigation, and it's taken all of these years to get there, was a genius. To be able to navigate the system that well, and no one's coming back to go, this is all wrong. I mean, a lot of people were raising the flag, but they had the blocks up. That's like, that's great. You can think it's wrong, but there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, boy, that's where all the questions are coming from. You know, there's a lot of blocks there, which meant that someone had a lot of influence over someone to block it, which, unfortunately for me, says there's a deep rooting core of badness in there somewhere. You know, the Alec Murdaugh case showed a level of corruption by his family in that entire area for years and generations that people were fearful of it. you know, we're seeing it potentially in the Delphi case as well. You know, it's like there's a lot of weird things that are going on. And we definitely saw it in the Karen Reed case, you know, and a lot of law enforcement up in that area. There's a deep level of corruption that's going on and bad behavior in law enforcement. And is this another case of it? You know, it'll be interesting and sad to see if it is.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in, and then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.